you're sure going down history trail. I don't know, it's kind of hard to think about things.
Well,
of course, again, those managers, you know, always think about fellas playing ball, you know. When a ball player gets to the big leagues, he should know how to play. Now, take your modern ball player now. He's up there, and they've got, I notice, about six coaches on every ball club. I'd like to know what they do. Besides playing bridge with the manager, I guess. But I don't understand it. When we were playing, that, like I say, you're supposed to know those things.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, so I don't know.
So it was 41 with Montreal. You guys, you said you got into the playoffs and you won the Governor's Cup. And that was your last year playing ball?
Yeah. Well, that ball club was so, I mean, uproarious, or anything you want to call it, they just tore it all to pieces. Oh, they just sold every guy in the ball club somewhere else. And they sold me, and I didn't even hardly associate with them. Because I didn't do any drinking or much. I have a can of beer, maybe, a bottle of beer after a night game or something. But I didn't associate with it. So I'm darned if I don't pick up the paper and find out that they'd sold me to Milwaukee. That's when Bill Leck had Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was the spring of the war, but broken out in 41. December.
Mm-hmm.
This is the spring of 42. Here I am, sold to the American Association. I'd started with John Hancock Mutual Insurance Company in the wintertime, during the off season, to get ready when I was through to follow the insurance business. So, what do I have a choice of playing another year of ball now or? Just keep trying to build my insurance business. And I have to say, I wasn't too wild about insurance because, I mean, it's just great me to have to call on a fella and then he'd say, I don't have time, and I'd come back again sometime or something. It rubbed me the wrong way. So I get a contract from Milwaukee for $500 a month. And I wrote him back, Bill Leck, then. I says, hell, I'm going to come back there for that. Last year we got at least $600. He said, I can't pay more than that. I said, well, okay, put me on a retired list. I quit.
Mm-hmm.
So then I quit.
You pretty disgusted at that point? Or?
Hmm?
You were pretty disgusted with the baseball at that point? Or?
Well, I knew we were getting toward the end of the trail. And the problem with that is the minute you've been in the big leagues for years and you're down in the minors, you just lose any... Just I better look for something else.
Mm-hmm. You,
nothing to work for.
You mentioned earlier after you got done playing ball, then you went with bowling for a while and you were into the bowling business, but was the adjustment from playing baseball to life after baseball, was that an easy adjustment for you?
No, I never missed it at all. Of course, I went right from baseball out to bowling, where I was all tangled up, and, well, that's, like I say, during the war, I had about five baseball fields, and we had teams, and everything. We rented a bowling lane in town and for all of our hundreds of bowling teams, and I was still tangled into sports so much that in softball we had about five or six softball leagues, and hell, it kept me going trap shooting and everything, you name it, that we had it. So I just kept, just might say, working night and day.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't miss baseball any. Besides, it got so with the wife and three children, and they were going to school, like Montreal. I left home in about the 15th of March, and never saw them again till about middle of October. Except Mama come back once to Rochester and spent a couple of weeks on one of our road trips. But that's a hell of a life to have.
All the places that you played, do you have a favorite park that you played in?
Oh, well, from a hitting standpoint, Old Baker Bowl, on account of a little small ballpark, because those pop flies were doubles. Let's see, Brooklyn, New York. I think at all the parks, I really think I like St. Louis Sportsman's Park best.
And why was that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe because I always hit well there in the right field. The right field was just a nice, good pop fly away. And it wasn't it. And I mean, a long fly ball at, I think it was about 330 feet something. But I mean, nice. And it was a low grandstand, so. Most anywhere else, that same ball is a home run in St. Louis. It's going to be a double. A lot of other places, except Pittsburgh, would be a nice big long out. But I don't know. I just seemed to hit pretty good in St. Louis.
Did you have some place that you didn't particularly like? Some place you hated to go to?
Well, Phillies, New York, Boston. I like Boston, although it was a dead. They kept the grass about that high because they had a slow ball club. So they tried to slow up all the fast teams. Chicago, Cincinnati. I never had any ballpark that I actually disliked. Mm-hmm. No, they were all pretty good. Of course, the polo ground is kind of tough to hit because every place, if you hit it down the line, gee whiz, 254 feet. I mean, hell, the right fielder in Pittsburgh have to run in to catch a home run there. But there, and then it angled out like this. But that's where Ott trained himself just to...
Turn his wrist over?
Yeah.
You mentioned Bill Clem with the baseball and the dry ice before, but when I was doing a little bit of the research for this, you were involved in one of the few times, I guess, that he ever changed his mind on the ball field itself. I guess you were on first base, and is it Emil Leonard was pitching, and they called a balk, and you went down to second. And then after I guess he said that he had faked a throw to first or something like that, but his foot wasn't on the rubber, so Clem changed his mind and sent you back to first base. Do you remember that?
No, I don't. No, I don't remember. Leonard, he was with Brooklyn, wasn't he?
Yeah, Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. Knuckleballer. I don't remember. Hell, after all, that's...
quite a while ago. But how about the... there was another umpire by the name of Cy Rigler.
Oh, yeah, big old Cy.
And was it true that he used to hold up the second game of doubleheaders so he could eat?
What for?
So that he could eat.
Sometimes
he would start 45 minutes late. He was a big guy, wasn't he?
They had Major Kurth. There was another one. Oh, there was something, you know. He's a big, hard-headed Dutchman, but a great big fella, too. They tell about the time we weren't there, but that's right. Playing Brooklyn, nice summer afternoon, and infield practices were over and they're ready to start the ball game, and the umpire's quarters were way down the right field line, and they come out right down the corner and then walk down the first base sideline here. And here they come, and we're our dugouts over in third base side. Well, Brooklyn, they had a, I don't know what they call them, a little band, three fellas.
The symphony band?
Is that it?
Yeah,
that's what it was, yeah. They dressed up funny outfits, and one of them played, East played a different, and they would go through the grandstand and play a tune or this or that or whatever they happened to. Here come the three umpires, and one of them spotted them, and they stopped. They stopped and started playing Three Blind Mice. Maybe you heard that. And you should have seen the crowd. Oh, maybe 7,000 people. That really stopped the show. But Clem was undoubtedly the best umpire that ever lived. Yeah, he was. Mage, he was. Clem, the only thing, you know, they call him Catfish. He had a face that kind of looked like a catfish in a way. I mean, kind of broad or something. And that would drive him nuts. He'd just stop a ball game and throw a guy out of the ballpark if he'd called him that. And that went on, I don't know, first time. Trainer, I was there in the dugout and then in the Polo Grounds one day, and that's in 1931. I didn't know anything about it. Trainer said, hey, holler Catfish at that umpire. I said, well, hell, are you Catfish? And then off come that mask, over he comes. Oh, if I can find out who did call him that, I was scared to death. I didn't know. But then they go to Brooklyn, or Philly. They had two brothers over there. They're what they call hucksters. Well, one of them always sat behind the Philly dugout, and the other one behind the visiting dugout. And here comes this particular series, and Clem is there. And one of these hucksters got up over behind the Philly dugout, and a voice he could hear halfway to London, I guess. Brother, the other one got up. Yes, brother. He said, what'd you have for lunch today? Oh, I had Catfish for lunch. And here's Clem at the home plate, you know. He damn near forfeited the ball game. Imagine that.
Well, you said he was undoubtedly the best umpire ever. Why do you say that?
Well, because the more important the game was, the better he was. I mean, he said, maybe I've ever missed one, he said, but not from here. You know, and he didn't that I know of. He was a good umpire. He's like that kid in Detroit, goes up the home plate. He takes it, just a rookie, takes a third strike. Raise the hell with the umpire and just carries on up there, you know. And it's finally, he says to the umpire, says, what's your name? And the umpire says, my name is Moriarty. He says, Moriarty, umpired for years in the American League. The kid says, you spell that with one I or two? Moriarty says, one. The kid said, that's what I thought. Moriarty kicked him out of the ball game. Then they say about 4 months later, well, the same situation comes up where the kid's up there and takes a third strike. He didn't see anything. He took his bat and he flipped it up in the air just as high as he could. Moriarty says, if that bat hits the ground, it's going to cost you $50. And they say you should have seen that kid try to catch that bat. Probably just a story, but Somebody dreams those things up.
Did you ever get thrown out of a ball game?
Only one. Bean Reardon one day. I had a big hopper or something and run like hell to first base, and I was on it and just going off when they caught the ball, and he called me out. cost me a base hit, which after all was our living. Yeah, and I was being, how in the hell could you miss that? I took my cap and flipped it up in the air, and I was gone. That's the only time I ever got kicked out of a game. I still was, don't know, he said. Hell, we missed him, he said, and I thought you're out, but that, I don't know, we're playing in St. Louis one day. And Charlie Moran, old Uncle Charlie, we called him. He used to coach Center College, a college team that beat Harvard that year, if you ever happen to remember that or something. But he's behind the plate. So there was a little trouble remembering what that O'Hallahan was pitching. And he gets me, I don't know, a couple balls and something, or three and one or something anyway. Bill, he fires one up there, three and one, I guess it was. He fires one up there and it's right across the heart of the plate, right here. Of course, Charlie says, strike two. I said, turn to him and said, Charlie, how in the hell could that be a strike? He said, well, it's over the heart of the plate, he said. Yeah, waist high. I see, yeah, I know that. But the ball hit out there about 6 feet in front of home plate and bounced over. Who the hell it did, yeah? I know, that's all right. I couldn't hit him anyway. That's the worst known strike ever called in baseball. I guess hit out in front about 6 feet and bounced up right in the heart of the plate.
I know the Cardinals and the Giants used to have some pretty good, I guess they had some beanball wars. They used to have some pretty good fights. What was the best fight you remember?
Oh, I don't know. I've seen a lot of fights, but I've never seen anybody ever get hit. I know one day in Chicago, the Lavadero slid in a second base into Billy Herman, and they started kind of scuffling around or something, and of course here comes both ball clubs like a bunch of Jack Dempsey's out there milling around, and that was the year that they traded Guy Bush over to Pittsburgh, and Charlie Grimm was a Cub manager. I was on the outside there taking it all in, you know, and I didn't know if any quarrel with anybody. And Stan Hack was standing there. And our fight was finally over. The only guy who got a black eye was Guy Bush, I think, or Charlie Grimm, because they traded Bush over to us from Chicago. And during all that fighting, I guess Bush laid one on the Grimm, but that's the only one. And one day in Pittsburgh, Al Todd, I guess it come back when he and Diz were in the Texas League. Anyway, they got in a scuffle and somewhere or other. So in Pittsburgh one day, Todd's now catching for the Phillies and Dean pitching for the Cardinals. Well, then Todd come over to us, you know. And Dean did something. He threw a ball to Todd. I don't know whether Todd hit it or what it was, but anyway, I think what he did was hit a little bouncer halfway down, dribble down the first base line. Dean comes over to get it, and first thing we know, they're both down on the ground, just really going at it. I don't know yet what caused it. But they found out later that they had that before and they didn't like each other, I guess.
You mentioned earlier that, I think it was Montreal in 41, you said you're away from your family for 7 months. What did you like traveling around when you were playing? I know it was all by train.
I didn't mind it much. Because they were just overnight hops, all of them. Now it's just a couple hours.
Yeah. It was tough being away from your family, though, for months and months on end?
No, your family come back there. You get an apartment or a home. Several years we rented a home from somebody. And, yeah, kids were all right. We'd be going in on a road trip for 2 weeks. Like in Pittsburgh, we run around with the sewers a lot. And the women go out to, they had some relatives out in a little town named Souterville, right outside of Pittsburgh. And we'd go on the road. They'd go on out there about every other day. But old Mage, he was the one that, you know, we're playing the Giants 1 year. And they come into Pittsburgh, latter part of August, 4-game series. And we're 7 games behind them in second place. And we got to damn near sweep the series. Well, the first game we beat, beat Shoemaker, I think it was, and the second day we beat Fitzsimmons. Now the third day it's a Sunday, we're playing a doubleheader, and we got Hubble now the first game, and Parmalee, that's probably four of the best pitchers the staff I ever saw. Mm-hmm. Four good pitchers, yeah. But Hubble's pitching the first game Sunday. And we're going along, we got to beat them. We're going along playing the ball game, and they finally, about the fifth inning, fill the bases on us, and Hubble's at bat. In Pittsburgh, the left field line, it runs right down to the scoreboard, runs here, and the line runs right down. There's only space about that much between the baseline and where the bleachers were. And the grandstand, or the scoreboard, out too. So you got that little niche there. Mm-hmm. And the damn ball hit right down in there. You couldn't get to it. I run over the line as far as I could. No, they had the bases full, and all three runs score. But of course, Trainer comes out and raises hell. The ball was fouled. Mage is standing there, and I'm standing out in left field cussing our luck. And finally, Mage, I look, he's waving here. So I go on into home plate, and he says, "Boy, I want you to answer me the truth now." He says, "Was that fair or foul?" "Well, what would you do?" I say, "Foul ball." I don't know what he'd have done. It was a fair ball, and I knew it was a fair ball. Live with that the rest of my life, a distance, well, I don't know. I said, "It is a fair ball." Well, Trainer turned around and walked back to the dugout, and that ended it. And Mage says, "I'll make that up to you someday, boy." So I go back. About 2 years later, we're playing Brooklyn in Pittsburgh, and we win the ninth inning with the bases filled. And I get the count. They had a pitcher named Perkins, a left-handed pitcher. The count was two and two. And he fired a fastball up there, and I thought it was outside about that much. And I took it. Ball three. Al Lopez was catching. Turned out he just raised in hell with magic. That was a strike. Damn it, Francis. Was it something right or not? I don't know. Might have been over the heart of the plate. I mean, it was a good pitch. But anyway, I took it. Mage says, "I call that a ball, and the next one will be a ball." Finally, Perkins winds up and lets one loose right, just, we say, cock high right over the middle of the plate. Ball four, the ball game's over. I dropped my bat. Chern Major says, "We're even, boy," and he walks off. And that's something I never forgotten that.
Who'd you room with when you were on the road?
I roomed with Pep Young for about 5-6 years. And then when they, in 38, when they got Rizzo, they put me in with him. Mm-hmm. I forget who the hell I roomed with. I think Pep joined the club about 34. We roomed together 5-6 years.
You didn't room with Gus at all?
No.
How about, did they put Archie Vaughn and Honus Wagner together? Did those two room together?
No. No, Honus roomed by himself.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Those days you had the same room. The ball club didn't change as much as they do now. Oh, Pep. Pep might say 12 words a season. That was about all. He and Tommy Thevenot were great pals.
Yeah. How about the equipment? You know, the of course, you're talking about the baseballs going from 1 year to the next. They seem to be livelier 1 year or dead the next year. That's one thing. And the bats they use nowadays are pretty much the same. But yes. What about the other things? What about the uniforms and the gloves?
Oh, well, there. Gee, once you get into that, I remember in St. Louis, and I wasn't too big. Hell, I only weighed 140 pounds. And they had those big flannel uniforms. Well, now, when we went back to the old-timers game in Pittsburgh some years ago, we had a uniform I put on one of Willie Stargell's uniforms. And I don't think the thing weighed a pound. Mm-hmm. It's made of this, is that what it was? Yeah. And we played the big old flannel deals on, and they must weigh, you get out there in St. Louis in the hot sun, well, hell, it didn't perspire. Well, that damn thing would weigh 5 pounds at least. Oh, yeah. And a team, we played doubleheader in St. Louis. We'd have to change uniforms during the between games if we had an extra set.
What are the, nowadays, during doubleheaders, I imagine in the clubhouse they've got this big elaborate spread, food, this, that, and the other. When you guys played doubleheaders, what did the club provide for you in between games?
Nothing. Nothing. We wanted a hamburger hot dog, we'd give the clubhouse boy a quarter and he'd go out and get one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I remember that time when we were in Pittsburgh, when the old timers game and we went back there. Oh, hell, it just...
Couldn't believe it, huh?
Thanksgiving feast every
like
night.
Dying like you're having, huh?
Gee, no, we didn't get anything. And we had to pay the clubhouse boy ourselves.
Yeah. What equipment did the team provide, and what did you have to come up with on your own?
They furnished the uniform, and that was all. We had to buy our own gloves and shoes and sweatshirts and sliding pads and everything else. Yeah. Now they furnish all that for these guys only getting $2-3 million a year. Mm-hmm. You know, they brought up Frankie Frisch told me this. He was here some years ago, and went out to Boeing and talked to the supervisors club, and of course they invited me out. And he was telling me after the he'd given his speech, I picked him up and we drove around and showed him the town. He was talking about this union now. He said he and Bill Terry had brought it up to the union, this Miller.
Marvin Miller?
Yeah. About how these old ball players, they played for years, they didn't make any money. And hell, a lot of them are just existing. Why can't they, with this millions of dollars in union funds, give those guys $300-$400 a month so they can live instead of that? And you know what Miller said? said, let the old son of a bitch just starve to death, and the quicker the better. Yeah. Now, I don't think Frankie had any reason to make that up. And, yeah, there's nothing to hear, Terry, because they both had it made, you might say. Yeah, but I was often thought of that about, well, look, yes, sir, he went to work in a brewery, retired with a little few dollar pension with the Social Security, he's just existing. Lloyd Weiner, hell, the most Lloyd ever made, a little poison was $12,000 a year. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, when he quit, he went to work for Oklahoma City, for the city. He got a little pension, Social Security. But it, nothing. Now, those guys helped make baseball. Yeah, but yeah, let them starve to death, the quicker the better.
You said that $10,000 was the most you made in a year. Did you ever have a deal with the Pirates, or anybody else for that matter, that you went into contract at the beginning of the year, and they would give you that hard luck story about we're not making all that much money, blah, 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 but if you have a good year, we'll make it up to you, and then they never did.
35, I got a contract. I think it was $5,500 for the year. I wrote them back. I think I hit 296 that year. It wasn't bad. You know, I told them once, and they finally wrote me a letter and said, if, in our opinion, you have a good year this year, we'll pay you a bonus. Whatever they thought it was. Well, I kept the letter. Away I go. Had the year. Well, and I got the year. I hit 325 and got over, I think one of the three men that got over 200 hits.
Right.
Yeah. So I take the letter up there the day of the season after it ended, the next day, and I said, okay, I'll talk, say goodbye and talk to you about this agreement we had. No agreement? What are you talking about? Huh? Oh, he said. Well, it's good. Good year. He said, I'll take it up tonight and I'll come back tomorrow. Well, now, after a year like that, I think it was the ninth in the league in hitting. What would you think it's worth? I mean, what would you think, as a guess?
Well, judging from the times, I don't know, let's say $10,000.
Yeah, $500. You thought he'd give me the franchise.
So he went from 5,500 to six.
Well, there's a bonus, yeah. So I made six.
I was only off by 4,000.
Yeah. And the next year I got I thought surely I'd get, like I told them, Lloyd's getting 12,000, Paul getting 16. I'm sure as hell worth half of that, aren't I?
Mm-hmm. About, you said towards the end of your career you got into the insurance business in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, did you work in the off season back in the 30s when you were playing with the Pirates?
No, not the first 3-4 years. We used to every other year drive out to Seattle. The season ended like 31 we wintered here, and 32 here, and 33 we drove out to Seattle, and then wintered here in 34, and then went out to Seattle in 35, and maybe 37. Yeah.
Did you do any barnstorming at all?
Once.
After the season was over?
Once, that's my first airplane ride.
Wow.
The season was over and we come to Wichita. We were going out to Seattle. We just visiting my wife's parents. I get a wire from Paul Weiner, says we're got up a barnstorming trip, playing seven games. We're playing tonight in St. Joe, Missouri, There was five of us. Yes, Paul and I don't think you know, there's Hollis Thurston and Glenn Wright and Larry French and I forget who the hell they are. Anyway, they're giving us half the gate receipts and we're playing tonight in Omaha, St. Joe, Omaha, Joplin, Kansas City, Joplin, Oklahoma City, Wichita, Dodge City, and Kansas City. And we're playing tonight. Well, this is noon. Hell, how am I going to get to St. Joe by evening? So I went out to the airport. Some guy had an old beat-up aeroplane, open cockpit. I said, I'll give you $30, take me to St. Joe. And he did. We flew to St. Joe about 500 feet in the air all the way. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was my first aeroplane ride.
Were you scared at all?
Yeah. And so we played there. Next day we went to Omaha and then we went to Joplin. I stopped here and picked up Mom and then we drove down there. Yeah. So we had quite a deal in that we played the Kansas City Monarchs 7 games. There were 5 of us, and then they picked up 4 semi-pros from each town and fill out the lineup.
And who did Kansas City have with them?
Hmm?
Who do you remember was on the Kansas City team?
Oh, I remember. Remember a pitcher named Bullet Rogan.
Bullet Joe Rogan?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably a couple others, but that's the one I particularly remember because he was such a nice fellow.
Mm-hmm. They didn't have Page at this time?
No, they treat us real well. We did, but we made. We got about $40 a piece in St. Joe, and about $50 a piece. We made about $800 over the week, I guess. The last game in Kansas City, of course, they had about 12,000 Negroes out there. And Oklahoma City was good. We got $100 a piece out of that. That's big money in those days.
How good was that Kansas City team?
Well, we beat them, I think, about three out of the four. That is the 5 of us, the 4 semi-pros. They weren't too much help, but they helped some. No, they weren't a big league club.
No.
I got to go to the camp. That coke went through me.
Were you superstitious as a ball player?
No, I was not at all. I don't know of any superstition at all that I had.
How about anybody that you played with? Anybody that was really superstitious?
Yeah, I guess they all do in a way that. I don't think of any.
Okay. Well, you played with the Pirates. I was watching a little bit of that film downstairs. You wore number 16. Is there any significance to that number, or is that just the uniform they threw at you and you put it on?
No, that's just the way it happened to be. See, they come in, I think, about 1930. 5 or 6.
Yeah, well, the book says 33.
33, yeah. Yeah. No, I remember Lloyd was 12 and Paul was 14 and I was 16 and Gus was 24. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I remember when they took, I think, 37, Social Security came in. They took $30 out of our paycheck. We'd like to have gone on strike. It seemed like a lot of money then, but it was a good thing.
Do you have like a, this is kind of a crazy question. Do you have like an all-star team? Do you have like a favorite player or somebody you consider to be the best player at each position?
Oh, I never gave it much thought. After all, they were all pretty good ball players in those days, or they wouldn't have made the big leagues. But of course, you had your superstars, naturally. Terry, I guess, was about as good a hitter as I ever saw. He could hit that ball you could just get your glove up in time to catch it if it was in reach. But it was just what we call a frozen rope.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't pull the ball much, like the polo grounds. See, Bill Terry, much good a hitter he was, he only hit 14, 15 home runs a year.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't hit that. He didn't try to pull that ball like odd.
How about manager? Was there somebody that you didn't play for that you would have liked to have played for?
Well, I'd have liked to have played for the Cubs. And I almost got to, they tell me, along about 35 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
I got in trouble 36, I guess it was. That's when I started getting in trouble with the office.
Yeah.
And I told them if they'd ever get some decent pitching, we could win some pennants, and they didn't think that was very good. So they tell me, I don't know whether it was a fact or not, that they had traded me to the Cubs for Frank Demery and somebody. But when they come just about close the deal at the a fellow named Size, a vice president of the Chicago Cubs, died, and that blew the deal out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to play for the Cubs.
Mm-hmm. If you owned a baseball team, let's say that you were the owner, who would you pick to be your manager?
I don't know. I never thought much about any of those fellas that did manage, but maybe it's prejudice or whatever you want to call it.
Well, that's fair enough.
But I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, I'd have a fellow like somebody like Red Lucas that knew how to pitch and knew how to get along with everybody and was a happy-go-lucky. And just, yeah, some of these guys... Martinet, to me, the craziest thing of all is that here's a bunch of grown men playing baseball, and you got to live by schoolboys' schedules.
Mm-hmm.
Be in bed by 10 o'clock. And, well, how are you going to ask? Why would you ask a grown man?
Yeah.
And if you want to go out like friends, like St. Louis, when uncles come up there, and they had friends there, and this day I hit those two home runs off of Dean. They wanted me to go out to dinner with them to their other relatives' place, you know. And I have to go and practically beg, can I stay out to, now maybe an hour late tonight getting back like a little school kid.
Yeah.
That gripes me. Well, of course, on the other hand, maybe some of them, but take 25 men together, you may have one or two oddballs and not many, but the rest are just fellas that are not jeopardizing their career or anything by staying out late one night or, I don't know. We'd go to Chicago where my wife's sister lived, and she'd come up there. I'd have a hell of a time. I'd like to stay out with them these 3 nights, you know. Yeah, instead of the hotel. And I guess the reason to let you do it because they save $5 room rent.
You know, this is the last one. You mentioned that hitting the 2 home runs off of Dean was probably your biggest thrill playing. But turn the coin over. Is there anything that you wish you could go back and do over or do differently?
No, I had a good time. I like the only regret I have is I wasn't on some other ball club. Because I told you, I run into this left-handed hitting ball club. And It just there's nothing you could do about it.
Well, Woody, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, I enjoyed it. Just get back these old memories. Look at this book. Now, I haven't seen this in, I don't know, 10, 15 years. Here's old Paul. Abba Dabba Tobin. And old Gus. He used to come back here and visit us about every other year. He and his wife and they. That was something.